This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Send us an email if you so choose to talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with the remarkable Walter Imahara. He's been with us twice before, but he has published his memoirs. I Am an American is the book, appropriately titled. He was a young man who was taken from his home along with his seven siblings and his mother and father in Northern California and sent to what amounted to a concentration camp. It was a detention camp in Arkansas, and spent 3 years there. And in the process, they lost their home, their livelihood, everything. And Walter, as we know, got to Baton Rouge, and we'll talk about how that happened. But he opened Imahara's Garden Center and Landscaping Place in 1968, ran it for 50 years, and it still is open. But he has talked about this and many other matters in a remarkable voyage that is 83 years long. And he's one of the most fit 83-year-old people on the planet. And when I say 83 years old, he's probably more fit than most 23-year-old men. He can bench press his weight, and as we know, most American 23-year-olds cannot. And when I say most, probably 80 to 90% cannot at 23. But Walter can. He was a gold medalist, won it all in the 1967 Pan Am Games in the 132-pound division. At 132 pounds, he lifted 248 pounds. In the military press, and he is fit, and he is ready, and he is here to talk about his remarkable life. And we have covered some of this ground before, but Walter Imahara, you were a young man, you and your seven siblings. You all went from California to Arkansas because of what happened on December 7th, 1941. Can you recap that amazing time in your life in which everything was taken away from you and your family?
Jim, I can remember that. I was about 4 years old when the war hit, because I was born in 37. The war started in 41, huh? December 7, 41. But everything happened to my family. They lost everything on a farm. And then we went into camp for a total of 3.5 years. But, you know, as a child, Jim, it wasn't so bad for the children because we still had food. We lived in horse stables and barracks and et cetera. But at the end of the day, we always had the parents. So it wasn't bad for the children. It was just terrible for my parents.
And the war ends, and you leave Arkansas, and you end up in New Orleans first.
Yes. My parents, they chose to go to Louisiana because they lost everything in California. They have nothing remaining. So when they chose New Orleans because of the college and university in Louisiana, and their main goal was to educate all the children. And we're talking about even of females. All my sisters were all older than us, and they the one who first got the education. They pushed it every meal. That's all you let talk about.
Eight siblings together and moved from California to Arkansas, then to New Orleans. And then in 1951, when you were 14, you came to Baton Rouge. How did that happen?
Coming from New Orleans area, they had an opportunity for my father to start his own business. But you can remember, this is only just several years after the war is over, you know, like 10 years. So people were still prejudiced, but he wanted to get on his own and do his own landscaping. But it was real terrible. But, you know, Jim, there's one good story here, because the Jewish people found out about my father, who was a gardener, and can do a lot of pruning, okay? So they gave my father the pruning jobs, and then word spread around, and all of a sudden, mm-hmm. my father is, it's been said that when he came here, the landscaping in Louisiana changed, in Baton Rouge especially, because everything was overgrown. So he knew pruning from California.
And it took hold in Baton Rouge. Yes. And you are one of the most remarkable people in this community and maybe any community. You're this nationally recognized authority on landscaping, but also, as we know, quite an athlete. But the landscaping passion, you obviously were influenced by your father.
Yes. And that, when we go around Baton Rouge with my family and friends, I show them all the big jobs that were given to us. And, Jim, you can't believe that Baton Rouge gave us a lot of work, big jobs, because we didn't know a lot of these big owners of these malls and big buildings, but they knew about my father's background. Because of that, they gave him the work. And all of a sudden, things got better and better.
You have some remarkable photos in this book. And by the way, in this time, it's harder to find books that we want. And you can go to lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com if you have an interest in this book. And there are some amazing photographs to go with the remarkable odyssey that is the life of Walter M. Imahara. Afton Villa, you're involved with that.
Yes, we got to Afton Villa because that was a late 40s. And so by that time, I must have been maybe seventh, eighth grade. And the people in St. Francisville were not very prejudiced as they were in New Orleans. After the war, living in New Orleans, oh, we had a lot of people were called names, and we had always had fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a survival. But when we got to St. Francisville, things changed.
Well, you have these photos when you were in California in 1942. Japs keep out. You're not wanted. Japs keep moving. This is a white man's neighborhood. This is in California. And then there's another photo that is quite poignant in Oakland. It says, White and Pollard Grocery. I am an American.
Yes.
And you love this country. And ultimately, you served with distinction in the U.S. Armed Forces.
Jim, I graduated from University of Southwestern in 1960. And the war's been over 15 years. And I was the first of the four boys to join the military. Okay, we four joined, and we all four returned. But I went to OCS to get a commission, and I really had a hard time because the war has been over 15 years. There's still some prejudice in the services. But somehow I got through because I was a national champion in weightlifting in college, so I had all the strength. So I'd start breaking all the OCS records a little bit at a time.
A national champion weightlifter, and ultimately he was showcasing his talents in the U.S. Army. And you were into Struma High School. People may not know it, but Walter Imahara was in the same class with Smiley Gray Anders, Jr., 1955, 1 year ahead of Billy Ab Cannon. Did you know those two gentlemen when you were in high school?
Oh, yes. You got to remember now, 1955, it was an all-white school. And I appeared, and I was the only Asian, but they accepted me for what I was. A lot of them found out that I wasn't really an American.
Mm-hmm.
So even today, I'm very popular in a class after 65 years.
Well, Smiley is a force of nature. What was he like then?
Oh, same thing. He always smiling.
Yeah, always smiling. And Billy Cannon was the big man on campus, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. You know, it's they were the champions of the state champions in the football. And every time we go to a football game, of course, it's crowded because they want to see Billy Cannon.
877-217-5757 is your number if you'd like to join our conversation and talk at talklouisiana.org. Later, we're going to hear from Dane Sherman and Jeff Saddo on opposite sides of the political divide regarding what's going on in our world politically, and there is much happening. But Walter Imahara, this remarkable man, is now spent 1951 to the present, so we're talking almost 60 years, 70 years. 70 years, almost 70 years you've been in Baton Rouge, and you've stayed fit. Now, the gardening, of course, helps, but you don't get a body like that by osmosis. You worked hard and still do, I would think.
Yes, I still trained every day, but my background was in weightlifting, but I knew how to do it. And all the doctors to this date, they cannot believe about my joints, my knees, back, my walk. They can't believe it at my age. But I did it correctly. So I never. And if you played football, for instance, you get hit from the side, your knees are gone, or you get a concussion. I never had those problems.
You've never broken any bones?
No.
Well, that helps. But you're keeping it going, and you're an inspiration to all of us. And really, it shows that at 83, it can be done. There is no reason to let your guard down when you get to a certain age. As Clint Eastwood says, don't let the old man in. 877-217-5757 is your number. Walter Imahara, just reeking with power as he talks about his life. And we will return with him after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. The book from Walter Imahara, I Am an American. Walter runs Imahara's Garden Center and Landscaping Service, or he did from 1968 to 2018. And he is here to talk about his life for a few more minutes. And if you'd like to get in, again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. A listener asked about your legacy garden. That's something you take great pride in, the legacy garden.
Yes. The new gardens at Hemingbow just been built in maybe going about 2 years. And it is it's called a Japanese-American garden. Well, there's no such a thing, but in my life, I created a lot of things that are kind of controversial. It doesn't have all the features of a Japanese garden, so I made a mix of it, and I made a stroll garden in it so people can go through it. But you see a lot of topiaries. The topiaries were made out of different kind of material, boxwoods, azaleas, and Japanese yews, and it goes on and on. Because my father taught me how to do pruning to make bonsai, but the plant is in the ground.
Bill in Mid-City. Good morning, Bill. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention just real quick that I was a former employee of Walter Imahara's and Imahara's Nursery back in the 70s, and Walter was just really an incredible influence. From a business point of view and how he managed the nursery. And we've remained friends all these years since that time. And I'm glad to hear his voice.
And what's your last name, Bill?
Roundtree.
Yeah, so Bill's in the same line of work. You've done some great work in our community, too. Thanks for calling, Bill. Walter, it's nice to hear someone like that. You had a good, big influence on somebody who took the baton and kept it going.
It's always good to hear from somebody from the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, this military service, for a guy who was in a detention camp, how did your dad respond when his boy was in the U.S. military, Lieutenant Walter Imahara?
When I went in the military in 1960, war had been over 15 years, and my father already said that all four boys, you're going into the military. It's part of our life.
You were the first?
I was the first, so they were really sad when I left. Then they had a Berlin crisis at that. But you got to remember now, when I had that uniform on as a lieutenant, 15 years earlier, we were in concentration camp, and the same guards had the same uniform. And all of a sudden, here I am. I'm the first in the family, and I'm in Germany. You know, in the gym, the biggest part of this whole thing was when I got to Germany, I was stationed at Camp Dachau, okay? And Dachau, of course, noted for the 30,000
the Holocaust,
souls that passed away there. Okay, so it put it in perspective, when only four internees were killed by the military in 10 camps of 120,000 mm-hmm. people, you could see the relationship was not there. And so my life in camp, when I got to Dachau, was like not too much. It was really insignificant.
Well, and another story, an amazing one, was that when you were sent to Arkansas from California to the detention camp for Japanese Americans, you actually were moved from one camp to another 20 miles away in what is McGee, Arkansas. Fine little town. And by the way, the hometown of Nan McCann, the principal at Baton Rouge High. But the reason you were moved was the Germans, POWs, were sent to the other place, right?
Yes, we were only there for a short period because this other camp 20 miles away is being built. The German prisoner of war came in, so and the way I understand it, they were really treated well because they had the barracks, they had the food, and there's no places to escape. And there were so many of the German prisoners that when the war ended, they wanted to stay.
Well, it is interesting that they got a what probably was a superior facility over actual Americans, Japanese Americans, who were sent to an inferior facility in lieu of keeping Germans imprisoned who were fighting against the United States of America at the time. Sabash at the Country Club. Sabash, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Mr. Engster. Good morning, Mr. Imahara. This is Dr. Reddy.
Oh, okay, doctor.
Mm-hmm. From Country Club of Louisiana, remember the, when we built our house, you have done our landscaping.
Long time ago.
I bet
long
you.
Time ago. You used to live here.
I bet you have a nice home.
Oh, Mr. Imahara is the greatest gardener living here in Louisiana.
All right. All right. Well, another pat on the back for Walter Imahara. You have a huge legacy. And at 83, you still work out. Do you still garden regularly? Do you still do this?
Yes. I'm always working outside. I enjoy working. I do a lot of pruning, so I find a lot of peace in the gardens, especially the new gardens in St. Francisville.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on the air with Walter Imahara. Hi, David.
Your guest, Jim, is an example of why I love my country, the United States of America, so much. And I'd like to share history with your audience. In World War II, there was a battalion made up entirely of Japanese-American. It was the United States Army Battalion. Many of their parents, I believe, were in internment camps back in the United States. They were awarded more unit citations. They took more casualties than any other battalion, I believe, in the European theater, if not the entire United States military. They were absolutely feared by the Germans. And I believe that they were very historic. They rescued what was called the Lost Battalion.
Was there any bitterness? Thank you for the story. It's a great one, David. But was there any bitterness, particularly from your father and mother? They were uprooted with eight kids, and you had a thriving life in Fresno, California, and then you're uprooted and sent to a detention camp, and you can't go home because your house was taken away. How did they respond to that? How did they live through it?
My father was real bitter after the war. It took him close to 10 years to lose it because he was... When he went into camp, he was 36 years old. He had all those children, and he was top of the world in his business in farming in California. And overnight, he just lost everything. I mean, like, when you went into camp, you just carried a duffel bag, and that's all you can carry. So he was very bitter. But after he got to St. Francisville, the bitterness started wearing off.
John in Livingston. John, you're on with Walter Imahara.
Good morning. I appreciate Mr. Imahara being on. I remember their family on Antioch Road where my family lived. Matter of fact, one of my cousins married his sister. So, but a great testament to the Japanese Americans that, in spite of that persecution, still continued to serve their country, still continued to support their country. I'm just wondering if Walter can tell us a little bit about, if he hasn't already, how he feels about the anti-immigration feelings in this country today.
All right, what about anti-immigration feelings?
We as Japanese American feel like anybody that wants to come into America should come in correctly. They have to, you know, go by the rules and live here. And as you know, life is really hard for anyone coming in this country. There's still prejudice. But still, when they get here, we invite everybody to come to America. You can't beat this country.
All right. Now, finally, David in St. Francisville says, what about your secret to pruning live oak trees?
Well, it's a secret, Jim, that we don't like to talk about because it's a secret. Okay.
All right. Patrick in Inniswald, you got about 15 seconds. Patrick, you're on with Walter Imahara. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Walter, I just wanted you to know my mother really liked your father because of the struggles he went through, how he lost everything. And, you know, like my mother's family, they lost everything in Cuba when they got here to America. And, you know, Walter has been an inspiration to me, too, during the 80s. He's the reason I started buying real estate.
All right. You started an entrepreneur, too, in Patrick Inniswald, who's been successful and I understand has been evicting a lot of people who haven't paid their bills. So we'll return with Walter Imahara at another time. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Matt Doyle producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and your number is 877-217-5757. Professors Dane Sherman and Jeff Saddo speaking as individuals today on opposite sides of the political divide, talking about what's going on in our world, and qualifying ends at 4:30 today. Lots of races on the ballot November 3rd, 102 shopping days away from the election, not only the presidential election, but in Louisiana, all 43 district attorneys, 217 court judges across the state are on the ballot. In Baton Rouge, a mayor's race, all the congressional seats are up for grabs, and the U.S. Senate seat held by William Morgan Cassidy for the last 6 years is contested now in a big way by Shreveport Mayor Adrian Perkins, graduate of Harvard, West Point, where he was class president in both places, Harvard Law, by the way. And a 3-tour of duty veteran who got a Bronze Star for his service in warfare, a combat veteran. On paper, a great candidate, but in reality, the overwhelming favorite remains William Morgan Cassidy, and he just qualified for this race. And let's start with Jeff Saddo, who's based in Shreveport. And I understand, Professor Saddo, you're not a huge fan of Adrian Perkins. Why not?
No. Perkins has had to be charitable, a checkered career to this point as mayor of Shreveport. A number of things really early on in his term that a number of people see as ethical missteps. And there have been some policy decisions that have turned some people off as well. So, he's certainly a quality candidate at the statewide level. He'll draw 40% of the vote, at least. But again, I don't think that there's really any chance at all, barring some minor miracle, that he can defeat Bill Cassidy.
Now, it sounds like you have several bones to pick with Mayor Perkins, but mention one of the ethical lapses that you think he is guilty of.
Well, for example, and this was something that came out in a legislative auditor's report, basically just as soon, if not before, he took office, he had the city switch its long-time insurance provider to somebody, I think he was the cousin of his campaign manager. That ended up underinsuring the city to get back up to the amount that was necessary. Several hundred thousand additional dollars were spent in that year. That was last year, 2019. Finally led the city council to passing an ordinance saying that all future transactions of that nature had to have council vetting.
All right. Now, Dane Sherman has been listening to you, and I'm sure Professor Sherman, without putting words in his mouth, would note that the President of the United States has more severe ethical lapses, and the current senator, the senior senator from Louisiana, has been reluctant is a kind word, to criticize our president. And, of course, Bill Cassidy, in the last few weeks, it's been reported he used his campaign funds to get high-priced massages at the Penn Club in New York City, apparently a violation of campaign rules. Years ago, there was a full-scale grand jury investigation against Richard Ayoub for using campaign funds for things like a chimney sweep, and, of course, there was nothing found that would result in any charges against Ayoub, but he was forced to be a target of an investigation. Will it come to that with Bill Cassidy, Dane Sherman?
No. Jim, you know, Jeff and I disagree on some political topics, but we're not going to disagree that the mayor of Shreveport's not going to break. He's going to do best to break 42%. He's not going to win this. He's waited too late. The atmosphere is not good. He's not done an exemplary job in Shreveport. If he would have stayed at Shreveport and we could call it the miracle of Shreveport, then maybe he would have a better chance. But at 42%, that from 40 to 42% is it. And I wish people would take these races seriously and run to win. I mean, I don't know what he's doing, but he's not going to – maybe he's just going to raise his statewide profile.
Well,
he's not going to beat Cassidy.
Well, sometimes candidates have things in their past. The president, for example, had 6 bankruptcies, and yet he downplayed that. When downplayed it, never mentioned it. And if you had heard him, he's the greatest businessman in the history of the planet. So on paper, as I mentioned, when you talk about a combat veteran, Bronze Star, Harvard, West Point, it doesn't get much better than that. Why are you giving up on the Democratic choice in this race so quickly, Dane Sherman?
Because it's a red state, Jim. And when you look at the fact that look, Donald Trump was the very opposite of Perkins. Donald Trump used his bone spurs to get out of Vietnam. Donald Trump has no leadership, and yet look at his numbers in Louisiana, and he's going to take Louisiana again. He's going to win this state again. He's not going to be president again, but he's definitely going to win Louisiana again. And just because I'm just left of center doesn't mean that I have to not look at reality and be honest on the radio. So, I mean, I can't disagree that the Perkins candidacy is doomed at the Senate level.
Professor Sato and Sherman, 877-217-5757. There's a lot they disagree about, but they both believe Bill Cassidy is on cruise control to reelection. What do you think? Henry at the Country Club, good morning.
Well, hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Professor Dane. And hello, Professor Sato. Hope y'all having a great day today.
I think that's Sato, like Maddow and like Moscow. It's not Sato, but keep going, Henry.
Okay, Moscow. Okay,
Moscow. It's Moscow. Moscow. It's not Moscow.
Moscow. Okay, Mr. Trump's the direction he faces when he wakes up every morning. Okay, let's look at that Senate race now. Recognizing that the professor is in Shreveport and not in Baton Rouge, you have to take my word for it and take your word for it. You're familiar with Senator Cassidy's house over on Dalrymple Drive. Sitting on the University Lake, and how beautiful a house that is, and the real estate values over there. Mr. Jim, he snookered somehow or another and has that a house to where it's only assessed at $325,500. Now, it's worth well over $1 million beyond that, but Cassidy, by doing that, is basically ripping off East Baton Rouge Parish from our tax dollars.
All right. Well, what you're saying is true as far as the undervaluation of the house, but that's generally how it's done in Baton Rouge. Your house is assessed at what you purchased it for, and he probably purchased it at $300,000+. But he could go down to the assessor's office and say, hey, look, I need a reassessment here, and I'm being lowballed, and I want to pay more taxes. But Jeff Sato, there aren't many people in Louisiana or anywhere else who would voluntarily do something like that.
Yeah, no, Louisiana is famous for having assessors typically maybe go a little low on their valuation of properties. Remember, assessors are elected officials, and I think that says it all.
And it was the Advocate who reported this in 2014, and of course, Bill Cassidy got 56% of the votes against Mary Landrieu in 2014, and this time around, he is running as an incumbent, and he is much lesser known, Dane, than the junior U.S. Senator John Neely Kennedy. I talked to a candidate the other day who's a Democrat and no fan of John Kennedy, but he said in North Louisiana, Kennedy's popularity is very strong, and he has found a way to play to his base very well. Has Cassidy done the same as he is endeared with the right-wingers, the Bubbas, as John Kennedy is, Dane Sherman?
No, he is not as endeared with the Bubbas, but I think just the R behind his name is going to cruise him to reelection. I want to make a comment on what Henry said about that house. I've always admired that house. I was an LSU student, a grad student. I worked at LSU, and I would love to buy that house for $325,000, Jim. And I just put this offer right here on the radio that we'll buy it for $325,000.
Well, I can tell you, I live less than a mile away, you know, not probably about a half mile down the same street where Dalrymple changes to Park. And my house is assessed almost as much as Bill Cassidy's house, and I can guarantee you that his house is worth at least two to three times what my house is worth. 877-217-5757. And am I upset about it? Yes. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes. I would like to ask the question, why aren't the Louisiana politicians being asked where they would stand if President Trump got beat and refused to leave office? They should be asked this question every day.
All right.
That's it. I'm out.
Thank you, Mike. Jeff Sato, the president, told Chris Wallace he might not leave if he loses. He believes that if he loses, there will be some kind of fraud involved. Does he have a point, or is he inviting a constitutional crisis?
Well, let's see what happens. You know, I don't think chances of fraud, or at least fraud on an extensive scale, are very great. But you know, at the same time, you know, let's see what happens. And if it's a really close election, you know, maybe it matters. Maybe it's 1876 all over again.
Well, Dane Sherman, it does not look like this president, if he loses, and that's still an if. Las Vegas, he's still given a 36% chance of winning, although that means a 64% chance of not winning. But if he loses, doesn't look like he's going quietly, Dane.
No, but I think what's more apt to be the reality is that he doesn't stay in the White House, that he slips out the back door and gets on a plane and flies to Moscow, where he ends up spending the rest of his life. That's more likely than Trump. Trump has never fought anything. You know, he's got bone spurs that probably about 12 inches long on his feet still, I hear. And he's not going to fight it. He's going to be out the door, and he'll be just bathing in rubles in Moscow.
877-217-5757. We're back after this pause to finish the hour with Dane and Jeff. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and your number is 877-217-5757 for Professor Dane Sherman. On the left side of the political spectrum, joining us from his perch in Tangipahoa Parish and in Caddo Parish is Jeff Sato, longtime professor of political science and, of course, one of the most noted conservative writers in our state. He is with us to express his points of view. 102 days before the election, both of these men believe that Adrian Perkins, the Democratic stalwart for the U.S. Senate, a candidate who on paper who is a great candidate, but they say he's in over his head. What do you think? 877-217-5757. Anything else on your mind is also fertile for discussion. Mitchell in Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Good morning. The same thing happened over and over again. These politicians get in office. They go in with good intentions, but when they get in there, their intentions get bad. We need to just get ourselves together as voters and get the right people and some more young people, because the old people, they're not going to do right. They all about their own interests.
All right, well, one thing Adrian Perkins does have that some would view as an advantage, Jeff Sato, is that he's a young man. He's not even 40 years old, and I'm sure this isn't his last rodeo either. He may very well be a player in Louisiana politics for a lot of years, regardless of what happens come November 3rd.
Yeah, certainly he's in his mid-30s. That was one of the main reasons why he was elected mayor was he actually went up against, I think she was 71-year-old Ollie Tyler a couple of years ago. And Shreveport, the perception around here being for so long that The city's going nowhere. It's going downhill. It needs a shot in the arm. When you have a young guy like Perkins come along, and you know, keep in mind that he wasn't even a resident of the city until 2018. He was first at Harvard, and prior to that, his military service. Hadn't even voted in the city ever. And you know, he appears on the scene, and he's an empty vessel where you can substitute in all these hopes and dreams. And then, you know, that was definitely a reason why he was able to win the mayor's contest. Don't think that's going to translate at the state level, but yeah, if you're looking for a youthful candidate, he's a youthful candidate.
All right, and there are others, and of course qualifying goes through the 4:30 afternoon period today. Beryl Bilio of Billy Ott of Kentwood, John Paul Bourgeois of Gretna, Renee Jean DeRay of Metairie, Derek Champ Edwards of Harvey, Zon John of Lafayette, Drew Knight of New Orleans, Antoine Pierce of Baton Rouge, Aaron Sigler of Hammond, and Peter Winstrup of New Orleans. All of those people are running. And so, Dane Sherman, many believe that the race, which may even get crowded, more crowded today, could ultimately result in a runoff in December. Of course, turnout will be much lower in December. It didn't help Foster Campbell much when he ran against John Kennedy in 2016. But what do you make of the fact that this may go to round two? Is that possible, Dane Sherman?
No, it's with that many candidates. And the truth is, I'm pretty impressed with Antoine Pierce. He's been on your show, Jim, and he is he does not lack for answers to substantial questions, too, substantive questions.
And he's been running for about a year.
Even though he may not be well-funded, he's sharp, really sharp. And, I mean, I may vote for Pierce.
Well, you got two APs, Antoine Pierce, Adrian Perkins, both African-American Democrats, both young men who are very well positioned as far as future endeavors in politics. But Perkins has the mayorship of Shreveport, and he also has this great pedigree with the education. When you talk about a great education, West Point and Harvard Law, and, oh, by the way, he won a Bronze Star fighting for America. Let's go to Laverne in Mid-City. Laverne, you're on with Jeff and Dane. Hi, Laverne.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Dane. How you doing?
Dane's doing well. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'd just like to say something about Mr. Sato's language. I found it kind of hyperbolic. Speaking about Mr. Perkins having a checkered past, I can think of a lot of people with checkered past, but Harvard and West Point are hardly checkered. With regards to Senator Cassidy, you know, in the most recent past, I've been fairly impressed by what he said on certain things, and he is also has the bill right now to eliminate windfall provisions, which really hurts Louisiana's teachers, firefighters, et cetera. I would love to see that pass, but I don't know if that will happen.
All right. What about the checkered past, the so-called checkered past of Adrian Perkins? What did you mean by that, Professor Sato?
Well, his time in office, the one incident that I mentioned, there are others, but there are also some policy missteps that Perkins has made that was not well received by Shreveport City Council or even voters, apparently. The city had three bond renewals go down last year, and a number of people attributing that to some of the unfavorable publicity that Perkins had brought to the city. So,
all right. Do have some folks who have sent emails, and one asks about this dust-up between Congressman Ocasio-Cortez and the congressman from Florida, and believe it or not, this is his name, Ted Yoho. New York Times puts it this way: ever since Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came to Congress as the youngest woman elected to the House, she's upended traditions, harnessing the power of social media and challenging leaders, including President Trump, who are 50 years her senior. On Thursday, she had her most norm-shattering moment yet when she took to the House floor to read into the congressional record a sexist vulgarity that Representative Ted Yoho, a Florida Republican, had used to refer to her. In front of reporters, Representative Yoho called me, and I quote, now this is printed in its full glory in the New York Times, and I'm going to shorten it. called me, Representative Ocasio-Cortez says, an effing bitch. And she was punching each syllable in the vulgarity. And these are the words, she says, that Representative Yoho levied against a congresswoman. And the representative really has not apologized. He apologized for creating strife, but not for what he said. Dane Sherman is Congressman Yoho, a Yahoo.
Yeah, he's a Yahoo, and he needs a good ass whipping. That's what he needs, Jim. He needs an ass whipping, and she might be able to do it. But what he did was disrespectful to every woman in America, and he should resign today. But he doesn't have the guts to resign. And he needs to be run out of Florida, run out of the United States. What he said is just unacceptable, and he needs to be taken to task for it, and I doubt he will.
Well, yeah, and where are the Louisiana Republicans? Where is Garrett Graves? Where is Clay Higgins? Where is Mike Johnson? Where is Steve Scalise, who's the number two Republican in the House? Where are they criticizing Representative Yoho? Have they done so?
No, and you just mentioned a whole host of fake tough guys right there, particularly Higgins. Higgins has got more skeletons in his closet than he's equivalent to Donald Trump, just a little bit younger. Give him a few more years.
All right. Well, Brad downtown. Brad, good morning. You're on with Jeff and with
Dave. Good morning. I have a question for Professor Sato.
Yes, sir.
Why do so many evangelicals, specifically those in Louisiana, continue to support Donald Trump, a serial philanderer with questionable conservative credentials, who seems to defy Christian values with his every utterance? He seems to know very little about a Bible. He seems to not even know how to hold a Bible. He's had affairs with women outside his marriages, including with a porn star. He's constantly stating facts that aren't true.
All right. What about the evangelical support for our president? Why is that taking place, considering the president's background?
Well, he has delivered on policies that evangelicals find that they support. I mean, he's been very clear in his support for against abortion. He has championed some faith-based measures in government that languished for decades. Evangelicals are intelligent enough to separate the personality of the man who is championing these policies and the actual policies themselves. So, you know, certainly some do have qualms about some of Trump's past behavior, some of the things he says, but most see that he delivers, and he's delivered more for the evangelical community in policy terms than you've seen any president now for decades.
All right, Dane Sherman, you probably concur with a lot of what Jeff Sato just said.
I think they're part of the Trump death cult, and it's just not good. I mean, I think that evangelicals are going to have a reckoning. They're already having a reckoning with their support for this man. And it's not going to be good for them long term. And they're using him and he's using them. And that's never a good relationship.
The convention is now not going to take place in Jacksonville, Florida. We only have a few seconds remaining. But Dane, obviously, this is an interesting time and the president's behind. And you've got about 5 seconds. So does this really matter where the convention is?
It matters, and it also matters that Louisiana needs to close the schools from K through LSU. They cannot meet face-to-face this year.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you gentlemen. Always great to hear from Jeff Sato and Dane Sherman. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services.